It is Wednesday, January 3rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, North Korea reopens a cross-border hotline to the South.
There's actually even more concern, I believe, that if the North Korean side makes demands that the South Korean government cannot uphold or even accept, then Seoul would be put in a very difficult position.
President Donald Trump vows new support for the Iranian people. And Yellowstone National Park has a wealth of natural treasures. It's all ahead. North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un Wednesday reopened a communications link with South Korea for the first time in nearly 2 years, and the latest sign of an easing of tensions over Pyongyang's nuclear program. It followed an offer of high-level talks made Tuesday by South Korea in the wake of Kim's New Year's Day remarks about being open to dialogue and possible participation in next month's Winter Olympic Games in South Korea. In Washington, U.S. State Department spokeswoman Heather Nauert said, while the U.S. has objection to inter-Korean talks, she's skeptical of any progress.
If ROK wants to sit down and have a conversation with the DPRK, that is certainly their choice. If the Republic of Korea and if the DPRK want to have a conversation, that's fine. But we aren't going to necessarily believe that Kim Jong-un is sincere and is credible in his talks. We have a very strong relationship with the Republic of Korea, as we do with Japan. We have had a strong alliance with them for many, many decades. That hasn't changed. Kim Jong-un may be trying to drive a wedge of some sort between the two nations, between our nation and the Republic of Korea. I can assure you that that will not happen. That will not occur. We are very skeptical of Kim Jong-un's sincerity in sitting down and having talks. Our policy hasn't changed. The South Koreans' policy has not changed, that we both support a denuclearized Korean peninsula, as frankly does the world.
Kim also warned Monday the nuclear button sits on his desk. President Donald Trump late Tuesday said he also has a nuclear button that is bigger and more powerful. Tuesday, U.S. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley expressed concern about reports of yet another North Korea missile test. James Kim is a research fellow at the Seoul-based Asan Institute for Policy Studies. He was asked by International Edition's Victor Beatty if the reopening of a cross-border Korean communications link is a significant development.
It depends what you mean by significant. If you mean significant in the sense that the North Koreans are willing to now talk about denuclearization, I'm highly skeptical about that possibility. But if it's significant in terms of progressing towards thawing of relations and looking for areas of possible cooperation, this is a significant development in that regard.
The U.S. has indicated that high-level talks between the two Koreas is fine with them, but they don't expect much to come out of it. What is the view there in South Korea?
I think the view is very similar here, that there's actually even more concern, I believe, that if the North Korean side makes demands that the South Korean government cannot uphold or even accept, then Seoul would be put in a very difficult position. But in terms of the expectation about what the talks will be about, the government is keeping a very open mind and trying to use this as sort of a stepping stone for other things that they could talk about, for instance, the separated families meeting, possible humanitarian assistance, and possible even economic cooperation of some sort. But beyond that, on matters dealing with denuclearization, I think the government is keeping a very level head and a very realistic expectation that this is not something that's going to get solved overnight.
There's a concern expressed by the UN U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley that the North is about to test launch another ballistic missile. What's the view there?
It wouldn't be surprising at all that North Korea uses or thinks about provocation in the same way that they think about talks. That is, these are all signals or means of communication that North Korea uses in order to elicit certain kind of response they would like from the other side, whether that is South Korea or the United States or the international community. And so we would not be surprised at all if these kinds of overtures were coupled with another test of some kind. And the question would, again, be for the Seoul government here, the Moon administration, is whether to move ahead with the talks and to try to keep the mood in a sort of a more warm set, rather than trying to go back to the way things were before Kim Jong-un's last New Year speech.
In a VOA interview Tuesday, White House National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster said North Korea has never met a weapon it has not proliferated. He said Pyongyang is prepared to sell nuclear weapons for the right price, and the only way to curtail its nuclear capability short of war is coercive economic power. Power, he added, that mainly rests in the hands of China. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Doug Bernard. So, Doug, what's trending?
Well, this stems directly from the story that you led with today. You mentioned a tweet from Kim Jong-un and a subsequent tweet response from President Trump. It's worth taking a listen to the entire text of Mr. Trump's response. He tweeted out on January 2nd, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un just stated that the nuclear button is on his desk at all times. Will someone from his depleted and food-starved regime please inform him that I, too, have a nuclear button, but it is a much bigger and more powerful one than his, and my button works. That has really sent Twitter into a bit of a convulsion, I think. People are responding, and it's running easily, 90%. What was that we just heard? Here's just a sampling. This is Richard Painter. Richard Painter, a Republican. He was chief White House ethics lawyer for President Bush 2005 to 2007. Quote, two psychologically unfit men crowing about their nukes. This is not a good way to start the new year. Here is Robert Reich, former labor secretary under Bill Clinton, a Democrat. Quote, this madman is still the single most powerful person on the planet with the ability to destroy the world in just over 4 minutes. Peter Wenner, who is a conservative commentator, writer about sort of society and cultural issues. Quote, Mr. Trump's recent Twitter storm interviews are more evidence we're watching an American president psychologically, emotionally, and cognitively decompose. They go on. I could go on. I found one positive comment in support, Colin Rugg, don't know who he is. Quote, I think the best part about Trump's nuclear button tweet is that all the snowflakes are losing their minds. Not only did Trump offend little Kim Jong-un, but he also sent the left into snowflake meltdown mode. Well, I don't know what exactly the purpose was, but there is a bit of a meltdown mode going on. John Heilman also tweeted out, this makes President Trump seem, quote, demented and deranged. So, I mean, it's just really alarming rhetoric, I think, especially for people who remember the Cold War.
Yeah.
And to hear things being discussed so glibly on social media.
All right. Thanks very much, Doug. That's social media editor Doug Bernard. Here are some of the top news stories trending. In India, a Dalit leader calls off a strike in Mumbai. More airstrikes and executions begin the new year in Somalia. African conservationists praise China's ivory ban. And a minister in Zimbabwe says no electoral reforms are needed in that country. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Are you a daydreamer? Do you often find yourself staring out a window during meetings or class, lost in thought? According to a new study by researchers at the Georgia Institute of Technology, this may not be a bad thing at all. It could, in fact, be an indication that you are really smart and creative. According to Eric Schumacher, a Georgia Tech associate psychology professor and the co-author of the study, people with efficient brains may have too much brain capacity to stop their minds from wandering. Schumacher says people with highly efficient brains have a greater ability to think, which allows the mind to wander when performing simple and mundane tasks. So, do you think you have a highly efficient brain? The researchers say that one way to tell is that you are able to tune out during conversations or while performing tasks, and then naturally tune back in without missing important points or steps. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we look at the annual New York City taxi driver calendar. On Twitter, U.S. President Donald Trump promised new support for the Iranian people Wednesday. He posted even as Iran state media reported that tens of thousands of pro-government demonstrators staged rallies across the country after days of anti-government protests. Iranian state television Wednesday showed video of crowds waving Iranian flags and chanting in support of Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Later in the day, Iran's Revolutionary Guard said the anti-government protests that erupted over the past few days were at an end. VOA special contributor Greta Van Susteren sat down with National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster and asked for his take on what's happening with the protests in Iran.
Well, the Iranian people are expressing frustration, about a regime that pays more attention to exporting terrorism than it does to meeting the needs of its own people. So the president has been very strong in his support for the Iranian people and their rights to express themselves. And I think what's most important now is for the whole world to tell Iran that they have to respect the rights of their citizens and allow them to demonstrate peacefully and to not engage in the kind of violence against the demonstrators that we saw, remember, back in 2009 and that we're starting to see now as well.
Well, in 1956, we had a similar situation in Hungary, and the West didn't support the protesters there. We've seen it in the early 90s with the Kurds in Iraq, and again, the United States voices support but didn't do anything. And we, as you mentioned, 2009, when President Obama was president and the Green Movement after the election, is this administration going to do anything more than voice verbal support for the protesters, or can they?
Well, we'll see what options are available. But I think what we need is strong voices across the world on behalf of the Iranian people. This is a dictatorial regime that is oppressing its own people, that is using the resources that this great nation with this rich culture and rich history needs to foment hatred and violence across the greater Middle East. They are a driving force behind this fitna, behind this sectarian civil war that has caused so much pain and suffering and death in Syria, in Iraq, in Yemen. They pose a continuing threat to Israel and within Lebanon to its stability. And this regime has to be held to account, and it seems as if the Iranian people are expressing their displeasure about the behavior of this regime and prioritizing this kind of violence over the benefit of and the welfare of their own citizens.
I was comparing and contrasting my own mind in 2009, which was provoked by an election that the people then were, they were unhappy with the election. They thought it was unfair. This one is a little bit different, almost spontaneously in a number of cities that there's been a protest. At first, the suggestion was that it was as a result of an economic situation, that any sort of the economic benefits that they anticipated from the Iran deal didn't trickle down to them. Why do you think this is, was this provoked by economics or by Western influence? Why do you think the protests were sparked in the first place?
I think what's key is to let the Iranian people speak for themselves on this. I think it's dissatisfaction with this dictatorial regime. It was over economics to a certain extent, and the skyrocketing of prices, the very high rate of unemployment, especially among young Iranians. And these are people who know the great potential of their country, and they're frustrated to not be able to take advantage of that potential. But it's also been about the external behavior of the regime and how this is a regime that gives safe haven to Al-Qaeda terrorists who target Shia Christians, anybody who doesn't do, and any Muslim who doesn't adhere to their narrow and irreligious definition of Islam. And so this is a regime that is dishonest fundamentally, and a regime that has helped drive violence and hatred across the whole region.
National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster, he was speaking to VOA special contributor Greta Van Susteren. The New York City taxi driver's calendar began as a tongue-in-cheek alternative to the famous chisel-chested firefighter pinup, while benefiting a nonprofit that serves immigrant and low-income families. Now in its fifth year, the creators of the parody calendar are out with their 2018 edition, and it may be their sauciest one yet. Ramon Taylor reports.
It's me, this guy, why, oh, so ugly you are.
The 2018 New York Taxi Driver's Calendar is out, and this year's international models from seven different countries are looking to brighten your year. In its fifth year, the calendar's creators say 2018 may be their best edition yet, a feat of photography that requires considerable courage on an open set.
There's people walking by and looking and taking pictures, so it is really amazing that the drivers sort of show up, and by the end of it, they're models.
Models of every age, shape, and background.
The 2018 pinup sheds light on a more intimate side of the diverse men and women behind the yellow cab wheel. Just in time for summer, you'll be graced by the irresistible gaze of Dan, along with Mr. September Hassan, who likes to have his cake and eat it too.
Oh my God!
We'll come in with 2 to 3 sort of scene ideas, and then we'll gauge the comfort level and the playfulness of each of the drivers and kind of try to fit that scene to their personality.
Some, like the self-proclaimed karaoke king, cover man Alex Wong, are born stars, even if they're only a little famous.
It's difficult to let everybody remember you. Everybody know you, right? You only be president. Everybody know you. I'm a little driver. So I'm already happy some people know me.
But he wouldn't mind if even more New Yorkers and tourists were to find out about him.
I will show all the passenger I was in the taxi calendar. And cover man, Alex Wong!
Ramon Taylor, VOA News, New York.
This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter. Every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This is International Edition. When you think about America's national parks, what probably comes to mind first is Yellowstone, America's very first national park. That was Micah Meyer's next stop as he neared the halfway point in his quest to visit every one of the 417 national park sites. He shared highlights of his visit there with VOA's Faith Lapidus.
Old Faithful is the best-known feature of Yellowstone National Park, which is home to about 500 geysers and some 10,000 other geothermal sites. National Parks traveler Micah Meyer got a chance to see many of them on his visit to the first national park in the world, established by Congress in 1872. He noted that it has half the world's geysers within its borders.
They have geysers that range from Old Faithful to these geysers that are basically holes in the ground that give us a glimpse into what the bubbling, boiling earth underneath is like.
And some of what bubbles up is mud.
They look like some sort of witch's concoction because you're just walking along this boardwalk and suddenly to your left and your right you've got these giant mud pools that are bubbling up in random spots. So it really is a place where you can see the Earth's underbelly.
The vibrant colors in Yellowstone's hot springs are caused by bands of microbes that thrive in these warm to hot waters. The temperature of the water determines the color.
Check out the view of Grand Prismatic from above.
Some of these, like Grand Prismatic, encompass every color of the rainbow. It goes from blue to green to purple to yellow to orange to red. Anywhere you are in the park, it always seems like somewhere in your 360-degree view, you'll see some steam rising out of the ground.
And what goes up must go down, and down fast, as the Yellowstone River tumbles over waterfalls on its way through the park. The Lower Falls is the tallest waterfall in Yellowstone. At 94 meters, it's twice as high as Niagara Falls. Many of the more than 4 million visitors to Yellowstone each year come to see one of the symbols of the American West.
Welcome to a Yellowstone traffic jam, aka an animal sighting.
Anytime there's any sort of animal on the side of the road, everyone seems to stop their car and take pictures.
Yellowstone is the only place in the United States where bison have lived continuously since prehistoric times, and the park's herd of 4,000 to 5,000 animals represents the last known wild bison population in the world. And there are plenty of other animals. In fact, Yellowstone is home to the largest concentration of mammals in the lower 48 states, including predators like bears and large herbivores, as well as smaller creatures. But the main draw remains the regular eruption of Old Faithful.
If you are on the hunt for geysers, you really can't do much better than Yellowstone National Park.
I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Thank you, Faith. Sounds like a lovely place. I'll have to visit it someday. Well, here in the U.S., also, the weather, the cold weather, that is getting a lot of attention. The record-shattering cold gripping most of the U.S. is blamed for at least 9 deaths in recent weeks, and forecasters say the worst is yet to come. The frozen fountain in the southern state of South Carolina is typical of how far-reaching the Arctic air mass is over much of the United States. The National Weather Service predicts the much below normal temperatures and dangerously cold wind chills will remain over the central and eastern United States over the next week. Strangely enough, Alaska is getting warmer. However, there's a storm apparently could bring snow and ice to the U.S. East Coast later this week. That is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
As part of the U.S. government's ongoing efforts to improve the health of all Ugandans, the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, recently launched a new $28.3 million initiative to strengthen health services in the Acholi region. This 5-year project, called the Regional Health Integration to Enhance Services in Northern Uganda, Acholi, or Rights Acholi activity, will enable Northern Uganda health districts to provide better medical services to Ugandans. Working with local partners, the Rights Acholi activity will increase health care provider availability, improve access to medications and commodities, promote effective equipment operation and maintenance, and improve management of health services. Additionally, the activity will promote the adoption of healthy behaviors by raising awareness at the individual, provider, and community levels with the goals of reducing delays in seeking care and lowering barriers to service usage. USAID awarded the Wright's Acoli Project to University Research Corporation, LLC, a global health organization with a long history of working in Uganda. This initiative is part of the U.S. government's annual investment of approximately $500 million in Uganda's health sector. The U.S. is proud to work with its partner, Uganda, to improve.
What's up, Africa?